The 4th of July presents some issues for public safety people, to put it mildly. Most people are off from work for the day. Many of them are highly active and celebrating. And then there are barbecues, fireworks, and other things that start fires, or potentially can, in abundance. So how does a fire department prepare for the 4th of July? Let's get the scoop from Marguerite Hickman, who is the fire marshal in the city of Ashland for Ashland Fire Rescue. Thanks for joining us again, Marguerite.
You're welcome, and good morning, Jeffrey.
Good morning. So just the general sense of what the preparation is like for the 4th of July. Granted, things have changed a bit in Ashland in recent years because fireworks, consumer fireworks, are no longer legal here. But what is the normal workup toward the 4th of July?
You know, certainly we are well into our wildland fire season. And, you know, this year our fire danger is about 3 weeks ahead of where we were last year. And so we're at a higher fire danger level. The fuels are very dry out there. And, you know, really our prep work is not only preparing our firefighters, but hopefully preparing the public to be very careful and safe.
What are some of the basic things you want people to know about? I mean, some of the real, like, you know, the things you might not even normally think about, but things to think about as the 4th of July and the hot season approaches.
Sure. You know, right now, one of the things we're trying to make sure that people are aware of, and you just kind of mentioned it, is that, you know, consumer fireworks, even though you can purchase them right outside the city, they're not allowed inside the city limits. They can start fires. They can be dangerous to people for injury. We also want people to think about just all of your activities that have some sort of a spark potential. So whether that's the mowing of dry grass or driving a vehicle in a dry area, grilling, all of those kinds of things have a potential to start a fire. And we just want people to be smart about it and be safe.
You know, I guess I'd never stop to think about just the numbers of different ways that things can happen when you have really, really hot weather, which tends to happen in July, and you've got different kinds of behaviors that come along with that. For example, something as simple as somebody having a picnic at their house. They've got a big dry field. They tell their friends, park over there in the field. Catalytic converters can set fires.
Absolutely. And, you know, currently, Oregon Department of Forestry has sent out the restrictions, and park or driving or moving a vehicle in areas of dry grass or off-road is prohibited in areas protected by the Department of Forestry. And so even if you're not in an area that's protected by the Department of Forestry, that is a really good thing to be aware of and to try to prevent a fire from starting there.
Which is generally good practice, as you're
absolutely
trying to encourage here. So to the fireworks example, you mentioned that you can buy them outside the city limits of Ashland. And as I think about it, I think it's only about a half a mile from the nearest fireworks stand to city limits, basically past the railroad bridge. And there you are on 99. How has compliance been? Is this the third or fourth year now since fireworks were banned in Ashland?
I believe this is the third year. I might be wrong on that. Third or fourth. Right along there with you. You know, compliance we've seen has been fairly good. I would say that last year I think we started to see maybe just a little more activity, and we really want to encourage people to set a good example for their kids, also to be, you know, thinking about the protection of your community. We've worked with law enforcement, and law enforcement is actually anticipating taking a little firmer hand this year with the use of both Ashland illegal and Oregon illegal fireworks. We've kind of got two grades there, and I don't know if you remember last year, but there was an individual in Medford who was using the Oregon illegal fireworks. Those are the ones that use a mortar and they go in the air and they fly high and all that.
Basically, if they fly or go boom, they're illegal by state law in both Oregon and California.
Yes, and for more details, somebody can, you know, look online, either the state fire marshal's office or your local fire jurisdiction. But there was a gentleman in Medford who was using one of those, and he actually injured his hand. He blew part of his hand off. And, you know, so fireworks may seem kind of, you know, benign, or that they're just fun and pretty, but they can have serious consequences. And even the little consumer fireworks, they cause injuries to both adults and kids, and they can cause fires. One of the things we have in our history is there was a house that actually burned down because of a fireworks caused fire.
And it was a legal firework?
At that time, it was an Oregon legal firework, yes.
Okay. I have seen other fire situations, too, where the ground-blooming flowers, for example, which they don't fly through the air, allegedly, but they do spin along the ground, that if they hit something, they can pop up into the air, sort of like a bad hop grounder in baseball.
Absolutely. You know, and fireworks, they burn at more than 1,000 degrees, so it's certainly enough to light grass on fire.
So you mentioned that the generally pretty good compliance. Does it seem like as if 4th of July is closer to a weekend, you might have greater compliance issues? Are just more people out and about if they don't have to go to work the day after the 4th?
I don't know that that's the case. I don't know that we have enough history to, you know, compare that, because typically everybody's off on the 4th anyway. And so you definitely have at least that one day that people are active.
Okay, you mentioned some cooperation between Ashland Fire Rescue and Ashland Police Department, and I see a joint release went out last week. To talk about what? I mean, what are some of the ways in which you'll be working together through the 4th of July holiday?
Well, you know, both the police department and the fire department, we all have the concern of safety for our community. And so, you know, the police department is recognizing the danger that can be received, or the danger our community accepts if they are using fireworks. And so they're just going to work a little bit harder at maybe trying to capture some of those, I shouldn't say capture, but trying to find some of those individuals that are using fireworks illegally in order to, one, protect their neighborhood and the individual, but also to protect our community as a whole.
We are talking about fire safety concerns with the 4th of July with Marguerite Hickman, who's the Ashland Fire Marshal. You might have some stories from your own town, either about prevention efforts or about things that have gone wrong. Maybe you've been a witness to a fire on a 4th of July and can relate that story to us as well. We'd like to hear from you. 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, by email jx@jeffnet.org. Given the fact that, yes, 4th of July is a holiday, a lot of people do get the day off, but in the city of Ashland, with all the things going on between parade, barbecue, performances, booths, fireworks, all that, 20,000 people in town, easy, on the 4th of July, do people in either the fire rescue or police departments get days off?
Certainly, there are people on days off because they got to work the next day. So we got to keep somebody fresh and ready to come in for that following shift. But we do have a few extra people on board, especially during the largest activity time of the day.
Which is what?
You know, pretty much during the parade and partway into the afternoon of the booths up in the park. That's for the fire department. And I'm not sure of the law enforcement schedule on
that. Given that it is Ashland Fire Rescue, I mean, do you actually find the ambulances are busier during the busy part of the day than the fire trucks are?
You know, it depends on the year. But, you know, we actually put bike medics out on patrol during the parade and through the park, just in case they can get there a little bit quicker in the busy crowds than what we can with a vehicle. You know, when our weather is hotter, we tend to see a little more heat stroke. So I'm going to give a little plug for safety there. You mentioned people are active. Frequently, we're drinking beverages that aren't necessarily very hydrating, whether it's caffeine or alcohol. And we have a lot of fun at it. But that mixed with the heat and any kind of extra activity we're doing can really lead to some kind of a heat-related experience that can be serious, or at least cause you some discomfort and ruin your day for a while. So we want to encourage people to hydrate. If you're not, we don't want to just hydrate that morning. You know, start now. Drink some water. Drink a little extra water today and continue to drink it tomorrow.
What are the signs of heat stroke that people should be watching out for?
You know, I think generally you're going to have this general, just kind of a malaise. You're not feeling well. You're going to be flush. Probably your friends may notice you quicker than what you do, honestly. I know that I've been in a situation where my husband called it out first. He says, you need to sit down and drink some water. So, you know, usually when we're noticing it, it's probably too late. So really that hydration and watching that activity early on is important.
Is there something of a magic number of the temperature at which heat stroke seems to get a whole lot more prevalent?
You know, I don't know what that is.
Okay. We have been talking about a whole bunch of things involving heat and fire. I haven't talked a lot about barbecues, and I unfortunately provided something of an example at my own house this week when the fat from grilling hamburgers continued to throw flames above the hood of the barbecue itself, which was a little more than I'd planned on, but that's the thing, is you need to plan ahead. So what are some of the things that often happen with barbecues, and what are some of the prevention devices you recommend?
You know, one of the things that we first want to recommend is that you make sure that your barbecue is in good shape. You know, make sure the hoses are connected properly. You don't have any leaks. An easy way to check to see if you have a leak is turn on the propane and take some soapy water and run it on all the connections. And if you get any air bubbles, that's telling you there's a leak. You know, also making sure, you know, what you had experienced, making sure you clean off your grill before you start it. clean it off with one of those wire brushes, scrape it with the straight edge side of it as well. And that's going to help out a lot as well. Want to make sure you pull it out away from the home. You know, I know our barbecue lives under the eaves, but when we barbecue, we pull it out. If you do have a fire, you just don't want it getting under the eaves. If your barbecue is out away from something, at least maybe it'll be confined just to the barbecue. And always keep an eye on it. You know, whether it's a cooking fire indoors or outdoors, if we're not there to watch it, we may not know that it's happening.
One of the things that I've discovered, too, is if you're cooking outdoors and it's cool enough to keep the windows open, close the windows between the barbecue and the smoke alarm.
Yeah, you know, we haven't had our smoke alarm go off, but I just don't like that smell in the house. There's a reason we're cooking outside.
It's a sort of a male-female divide on barbecues, isn't it?
Well, maybe.
Right. Enough said there. I understand that the city of Ashland has some new equipment to brag about this 4th of July as well.
You know, we are so excited to invite or to welcome in two new pieces to the new apparatus to our fire department family. We were fortunate enough to be able to replace our existing first responding engines, which are vintage more than 20 years ago. And these two new apparatus that arrived 2 days ago, they are 2014 structural type 1 fire engines, and people will see them in the parade, and we're excited to show them to our citizens. They were they belong to our citizens, and we certainly appreciate the purchase, but they're also going to prove to be more reliable. One of the challenges that you face with older equipment is you have more time downtime because of repairs and, you know, things that just aren't working properly. It's no different than our own vehicles, that the older they get, the more repairs we have. And but the downside for fire apparatus is they're supposed to be out there, you know, responding and helping folks. And so the minute they're down, then that's one less equipment that we don't have to respond.
How often do they get used, though? I mean, I have to believe that even though it's 20 years, it's not like 20 years of driving to work every day, because aren't there days when the fire engines aren't going to move at all?
That's possible. But, you know, the fire engines go on some medicals as well. And so I would say most days they're probably rolling at least a little bit. And one of the challenges with the use of a fire engine, you know, when we use our cars, typically we're driving for longer distances. The fire engines, they start up, they go for a few miles, and they stop. And so that's a little bit harder on an engine as well. One of the great things about this new apparatus that we have is just the sheer ability for maintenance. There's a lot of things that are more accessible in the equipment, so that, you know, it may only take 45 minutes to an hour to fix something, as opposed to a day having to pull things apart. So that's kind of exciting as well.
So what do you do with the old fire trucks?
Well, we have one that was sold in a sealed bid auction to a fire department in Northern California for $27,500, I believe. And the other one is a gift, is going to be a gift to our sister city in Guanajuato, Mexico. So once we're able to put our new engines in service, it's probably going to take about a month to get all the radios and all of our equipment moved over. It will go on a flatbed truck, and it will be taken down to Guanajuato. And it was exciting this week because our Guanajuatense guests were able to see it and take pictures in front of it.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah, it was wonderful.
So will there be one new truck at each of the two fire stations in Ashland?
Yes, the two engines that we just acquired, one will stay at Fire Station 1 as our first responding engine, and the other one will be at Fire Station 2. And then our first responding engines that are currently in use will move to be, or one of them will move to be a backup apparatus.
All right, so they move from the first position to they go to second string, basically, as they get older.
Exactly. That's a good example.
Spend more time on the bench as you get older.
That's right.
Will you have the new fire trucks in the Ashland Parade?
We will. We will have the two new fire engines and then also an ambulance.
It's pretty exciting stuff. Yeah. So did it take a grant or something, or was there some money from outside the city? Or?
This was actually budgeted in the equipment replacement fund. You know, there's a fund that we're continuously budgeting and putting money into to replace equipment that will be needed to be replaced in the future.
All right. Marguerite Hickman, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, Ashland Fire Marshal. I want to come back to some of the prevention techniques for fires as we get into the 4th of July weekend and the hot part of the year in general. You mentioned mowing grass, and I know there are some recommendations and in some cases out and out restrictions on state protected land about when.
Yes.
And what are the best times of day to do things like that?
Sure. You know, certainly right now on both Oregon Department of Forestry protected lands and within the city limits of Ashland, because we actually adopt those rules as well, mowing of dry grass is prohibited after 1 o'clock. So from 1 o'clock to 8 o'clock, 1 p.m. to 8 p.m. Mowing of dry grasses is not permitted. Same with chainsaw use. It's not permitted during those hours. And, you know, what I would really encourage people to do is just make sure you're aware of what the current restrictions are, because those will change. As our fire danger increases, as it gets hotter and drier, we're going to see those change. Sometimes they bump back to 11 or 10 o'clock in the morning, and we may even go to a complete shutdown. I believe we went to a complete shutdown last year for general public use.
And, you know, people are always surprised at the kinds of things that are restricted, but they don't realize the things that will make sparks. I mean, just hitting nails with hammers in dry areas can throw sparks off.
Certainly can. And, you know, the mowing of dry grass, you've got a metal blade, it hits a rock, and that's where we see the sparks. And we have certainly seen fires within the city limits. I can think of two right off that I've, you know, been involved with in my history here that have caused some good-sized fires, scared some people.
Yeah, and I can remember, too, I think it was the East Evans Creek fire about 1993 or so, started by some people using a cutting torch on a wellhead, didn't think it was much of a big deal, threw enough sparks, boom,
exactly.
10,000 acres later.
You know, and that's really what I'm encouraging people to do. Besides the fact that we do have rules for that kind of stuff, just be sensible about it. Think about what you're doing, and is it possible there's a rule about it, or is it possible that just common sense would tell you it's not a good time to do it? The other thing we see here is we have that wind pickup in the afternoon. So if we get a start, you know, it's going to be get pushed.
When in doubt, your fire department would probably welcome a call from you, not through the emergency line, though. Call the business line at your fire department and ask questions. They'll be happy to answer them for you.
Absolutely.
Marguerite Hickman is the Ashland Fire Marshal, our guest once again on the Jefferson Exchange. Marguerite, thanks.
Thanks, Jeffrey.